Hello and welcome to Talking HE, my name is Santanu Vasant. In this episode we speak to Verna Rossi, PG Cert course leader at Ravensbourne University, London. We discuss Verna's first book, Inclusive Learning Design, how the book came about, where did the inspiration for the roots to shoots approach to learning design come from, what did she learn from putting this book together, and any tips for others thinking of doing the same. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello. So yes, I'm Virna Rossi, and I'm the PG Cert course leader at Ravensbourne University, also associate professor, and I really enjoy helping teachers teach better.
Thank you for joining us on Talking HE. I want to begin by asking, how did the Inclusive Learning Design book come about?
Well, to cut a long story short, it happened because I was teaching already for a number of years on the PG Cert. And then every time we had this particular module called curriculum design, I would look around for models and approaches and to curriculum design. And I always felt that they didn't quite fit my own ideas of, because there wasn't quite this inclusivity lens. But also the other thing is that often they didn't particularly suit the type of teaching and learning that we were prompting, which is mostly project-based learning. And I just felt that there was always something missing. So I started experimenting and putting together myself some ideas, and eventually it turned into this sort of five stages where the values are really at the root, and then they feed into all other aspects. And I've already piloted and used it with colleagues, both internal and external, and I think it actually works. I'm happy to report that it works. So that's how it really started. And that was before the pandemic, that I'd already started experimenting. And then right at the start of the pandemic, I thought I would really like to share this with colleagues. I think it could really be useful, especially within the education developers world, people like me who teach teachers. And so I thought, well, it can't fit in an article, it's too much to say, so it has to be a book. And then I was really happy that Routledge were interested, and then of course we negotiated a bit how it could work, etc. And then it's become a book. So that's how it happened.
That's great. Where did you get the inspiration for the roots to shoots learning design approach from?
Yeah, so I'll tell you the funny part of the story is that, and this is the truth, I was in Kew Gardens with my little boy, and then he said, "Mummy, how can that tree stand, you know, not fall because it's leaning so much?" And then we were talking about roots. And so we're talking about why the roots are so important for trees, how they stabilize the trees, or the nutrients, etc., the whole cycle. And then somehow that idea and that conversation actually stayed with me for a long time. And I was thinking, it's true, the roots, you know, how many metaphors there are around roots. There's actually a book I read about that, roots and, for example, being rooted. And there are many metaphors around trees and roots. And I just thought, when I thought about the fact that I wanted something to be very much grounded and starting with values, it just seemed somehow to logically link to this idea of roots feeding the tree. And actually, by chance, I saw something on Twitter, and it was called feeding the roots so that the shoots bloom, something like that. But it was just talking about a different context. It was talking about how children in school have got their own cultural background and family background, etc. And those are the roots, but we can help them blossom. So it was a different, but just that the terminology of roots to shoots. Then I put the two things together, the conversation with my little boy and that. And then it just seemed to make sense because that the tree with the three branches, and then it just all came together. I don't know, somehow organically, I could say. So that's how it happened.
And what did you learn from putting the book together?
It's such a good question. Many, many, many different things. I won't talk so much about the things I learned in terms of the content of the book, because of course, when you have to articulate a very complex thing, which is learning design, in so many different aspects and angles and perspectives and context, in fact, because it talks about assessment and input and feedback. So you obviously have to learn a lot and do a lot of research. So in that sense, yes, I think writing a book forces you, forces you to learn your topic, let's say, even better. But besides that, I think I learned a number of things in terms of collaboration, because I was quite determined to bring in as many different perspectives and voices from all over the world. And I didn't know where I would find these colleagues, because I'm part of a few networks like yours, while some of them, we share. But I didn't know how to reach these colleagues who were in other continents, literally. How do I locate somebody who wants to talk about this, who perhaps is based in South Africa or in, South America? And so Twitter was amazing for me. It really helped me a lot connect with people I would have never met otherwise. And I think because it all happened during the pandemic, where there was this huge outpouring of professional sharing during on Twitter, for example. So that helped me a lot. So I learned a lot about collaboration, also the downsides of it in the sense of the amount of emails and chasing that you obviously have to do compared to you writing just a monograph with your own ideas only. Obviously, the more people you involve, the more there is all this. So yes, there was a lot of emails, time zones, etc. So this is why it took a lot longer than expected. But anyway, again, that's a learning curve. And perhaps another thing that I learned as well, just in a nutshell, in terms of the publishers. So sometimes, yes, I mean, Routledge, they've been very nice and supportive in many ways. But on the other hand, I think because they're so big and busy, and they can't always follow all the different aspects of a project the way perhaps you would have expected, let's say, as a new author, because I was a new author. And so I realized that I had to do quite a lot of the proofreading, the checking by myself or with other colleagues. So one learning is really not maybe so much. It's like, yeah, being realistic about what a publisher will actually do for your book, besides actually publishing it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. What would you do differently if you were to do a similar project again?
Perhaps next time, if I want to involve as many people, maybe I would be a little bit stricter, let's say, with the initial triage, because I felt that all the ideas that were contributed were so interesting. I was trying to include all of them, and then it just became too many. And in fact, in the end, I just couldn't. It was physically impossible to add all them. So just to be a little bit more maybe clear and strict with that initial call out and what is expected, and perhaps just politely declining some of the contributions if they don't fit the narrative.
Yeah. What are your top tips for others planning to embark on a similar book journey?
First of all, I would say if you have an idea, hopefully it's a good idea for a book, just do it. That's the first thing I like to say, because sometimes I think, there's a lot of self-doubt. It's a big thing. It is a really big thing to put yourself out there publicly. And of course, you open yourself to criticism, both good and bad. And you have to accept not everybody will like it, of course. But on the other hand, I also think it's a really big achievement in a way if you can get to that point. Because for me, I really do see it. I put that as a little... the first page, the dedication page for me was all the steps I've taken until now have led me here now. And that it really sums it up. I feel that it does sum up a professional journey in a wonderful way, and it obviously can help others. So I would say don't be scared. If you've got an idea, do it. Talk to maybe those who've done it or maybe publishers. If one refuses, I had four refuse for valid reasons, I must say, now looking back. But then I found the one who was interested. So yeah, don't be too scared. It can happen. And perhaps don't make the network too big if you want to involve others, if you want to do collaboratively, because yeah, it will increase the workload and the time to get it done.
How is your book different to others in the same category?
I would like to say that I think that there are some very interesting books out there. In terms of publishing a book, sometimes there are still very traditional types of outputs where you pick up a book and you really feel it belongs to, you know, a past, not just century, but, you know, maybe a couple of centuries ago. And it doesn't mean the ideas are bad, but I just feel that now we've got so many options because of technology, and there are possibilities of creating more interesting, let's say, books that can be more engaging. And I know that there are different types of books, of course. There are, I think somebody said on the CEDA Network once, there are readerly books that you just pick up just to read the story. And then there are writerly books where you're engaging the reader to really, in a dialogue, and maybe with prompt questions, etc. And so there are different styles of books. But I think also for me, what was interesting is creating the companion website, which really has this, is very much embedded in the narrative of the book itself. So some case studies, for example, have got the authors who've written the case study that's published in the book. They've recorded videos which are hosted on the website. So you can read it or you can watch it by going to the website. And I think that it would be nice to have stuff like that more, like just new outputs, even in terms of how the book is presented. And, you know, maybe what about having more of a visual, maybe, element? So I think that now publishers are becoming a little bit more open to producing books that are a little bit different than the usual that we've had, let's say. And I think that would be more interesting, especially for new teachers or maybe neurodiverse teachers, for example, who would like to engage more with the literature. Sometimes when they pick up a book, you know, and it can be really difficult for them to follow a very long narrative, you know, not like made it brought to life in any other way than the written linear narrative. So just an invitation for people to think about making different outputs, perhaps creating different outputs. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, that's really, really good point. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you to Verna Rossi for her time. Verna's book, Inclusive Learning Design, is available from all good bookstores. The companion website is inclusivelearningdesign.com. If you've got a comment or a query, then please tweet us at Talking HE Pod or email santanu@santanuvasant.com. Thanks for listening. I've been Santanu Vasant, and this has been Talking HE.